And we're back. This is Spectra, episode, I guess, 9 by the official count. And today...
The Ministry official count has determined that this is episode 9.
We have everyone very early in the morning, or earlier in the morning than usual, than we meet.
And 11:15. It's not very early in the morning.
Relative to...
Depends on which planet you're on.
Exactly. In Earth time...
Maybe you can guess that we've had way too much caffeine.
If not, you will.
So this might be a very goofy or particular episode in some respects. And yeah, we have kind of going back to an old format of having an agenda of sorts that we're going to split up the things we are going to discuss in kind of an organized fashion, starting with nuts and bolts. You know, logistics, roughly speaking. Then we're going to talk about the world and just kind of make some finalized narrative points about how the world works.
The worlds.
This world, at least. And then a character discussion, and we will end with trying to fill in the blanks on the story itself. That is what I have proposed.
Will you keep us on track? In terms of time?
Yes, I will most certainly try.
Lovely.
It's 11:15, so yeah.
Let's begin.
Logistics. We are now in the point of finalizing the starter pack text. At least that's the thing that has been occupying my mind most. I took a lot of Miguel's edits into consideration. You guys seem to be okay with how it stands. There's some confusion in the text about how you think about episodes. I think this is just like a maybe just a misunderstanding. Like
it was just within the text itself. It wasn't clear. It was like a matter of clarity for you, the reader and listener.
The podcasts are not like, I know we're calling them episodes, but the actual, we need to have some sort of linguistic difference between an episode of Spectra as the story, or an episode of the podcast. Right?
Let's have an episode for a podcast and a chapter for
the chapter,
story.
Okay. I think we all can see. So for the chapter, I think we are...
Or the episode.
No. For the chapter of the story, I think we're going to have 10... episodes roughly of the podcast. So we're at 9. So hopefully between 9 and 10, that's it. Like we are done with Adul. We are done with this one.
So with this chapter.
Yeah, this
okay.
chapter. That's
sounds like some wishful thinking, but
No. I outlined it and I'm trying to fill in gaps textually by like writing things down.
I mean, I agree that the plotting of the story can probably be done through this episode and next.
Well,
I'm not sure if everything regarding it is going to be done.
No. Yeah, the story side, at least from my point of view as the like creator of this episode, you'll have a talky...
Of this chapter?
Of this chapter.
Different.
God. Actually, maybe that like...
Damn you, Ashpure! You and your confusing words!
You did it again!
This story, no?
Yeah.
This story. Let's say, like, chapter. Let's say story.
Mm-hmm. Story chapter.
If we find that episode is the more comfortable word, then who can we fight it? Actually, but this is not what we... Let's press on and see what works and what doesn't.
This is what the coffee does.
Logistics, also just one last thing. Good job, everyone, on filling in their character sketches. They're lovely, delightful.
Are they all in one place?
They're delightful. They're
I think
delightful.
Someone still needs to do...
I still have to write...
Yeah, but that's the only...
The character descriptions.
Yeah.
There's so, in the doctor, in the document I've got, there's Morgan, and there's Ashpure.
Mine will be there.
Congratulations to Morgan and Ashpure.
So, but what do you mean by the fact that, well, thank everyone for doing it?
You too, I guess.
Me too. Okay.
We are everyone.
I already put in the Miguel delay in my brain, so it was
yes.
like...
It's a cultural thing, people. I'm sorry.
And I think
that's your answer to everything. Playing a card.
I think also yin-yangy wise, like he's editing the starter pack, I'm going to feel free to edit.
My character.
if you don't do it, yeah. Like, because also...
It'll get done.
Another thing I was trying to do as well is listen to the audio snippets of people describing things. So I have an idea where they are in the last 8 episodes.
Describing the characters?
Yes. Okay, and yeah, that's all for
in
me.
Terms of being like a moderator to see if what people write is in terms in tune with what they said.
Or included.
Included, yeah. There's
nothing
like,
is forgotten and left out.
That's an important thing, I think. I think you should also, if that's, and maybe a different person does it each time, but to go back and listen and see all the things we said we were going to do if they had been done.
Mm.
There's a lot of bold talk, you know, when that little red light's on, a lot of bold statements made, and then somehow when we are away, then it's easier to not do those things.
Mm-hmm. True that. Yeah, good job on the artwork. Do you want to?
You want to show people?
Yeah.
Artwork, yes. I think we still... I need the Viking character. I think maybe for the terms of the starter pack and maybe the trailer could go with the one that exists, but when the actual episode is made, we do the version that is in tune with what you have in mind. I think in moving forward, it would be... the way we would do it whenever a guest creator comes on and creates a character, after that episode, they come back.
We talk about the appearance.
We talk about the appearance, and that can be done offline, that can be done, they can, you know, take photos of people they think, or you know, it can be written. But
with
whatever
their permission,
it is,
please.
Of course. Whatever it is, it can be just a little brief for the artist, whoever that may be in future. And then it's a nice... way that nothing gets done that isn't in tune with the original creator's vision, or I mean there's kind of thing of, you know, the open source works two ways.
I agree, and I think it'll be very interesting also to see people's takes aesthetically on things that we've developed, because there's no real reason why, unless it's Harry Potter's scar, for example, that they need to stay exactly the same from interpretation to interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the, you know, that's one of the things, the nicest thing about comics is to see the artist, next artist, interpret a character and bring their thing to it. So Morgan is the character that needs defining. And I quite like this, maybe we need to save this for the character discussion, but I quite like a kind of two-step of her first... And then when she comes a little more badass later on.
Yeah, yeah, I also have
when
some...
they become...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have things in mind for the character part of this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And other than that, in terms of things that need to be done, we wanted the scene breakdown, which we have a version of that, and we want to start a pack text... Still, I think we need a version that can be snapped into a kind of...
So, yeah, just following up on that is that Miguel's edits, I felt, worked better for the email, text, like website, whatever format, and mine was maybe more talky, and I'm going to put the edits in the big major ones in both, of course, but there will be, of course, a more talky version that will be the recorded. And I guess this is the other thing. Do you remember the starting sequence? Is it the pink, pink boom and suicide? Can I use that already with the audio for the starter pack? Yeah, there's no. Okay, cool. Because I was thinking of using that, maybe talking really, talking while the thing is going on. So like while that transition is going on. I'm not explaining anything about the story. I'm just explaining Spectra as a concept and see if it works as a.
Okay. Yeah. Why not? And that's an audio that we can control, at least.
For sure, yeah.
And yeah, you guys can make the timestamps later on so that you can figure out how much you have to say with the images.
Yeah, I think I have a quirky voice in a way that I obviously have an American accent, even though I'm not American. It's like you know, James, the English accent when you put it on just right.
Hello.
yeah, the Miguel's bass voice also. Ooh. like what makes a narrator? Yeah, you know, like I think he's the most Morgan Freeman.
He was the most Morgan Freeman of us all.
True.
And
very true.
James is more Kenneth Branagh. I don't know. What's the
Rodney from Only Fools and Horses. That one's for the Brits out there.
Or Attenborough. What's this? The name of the documentary?
Dicky. No, that's David. Is the cool one.
I guess they have. I think both your voices hold a little more weight than mine.
And mine
acoustically.
Oh, bless you.
I like your voices too.
Okay.
Take your voices and kiss.
Voice kiss.
Voice kiss.
Anyway.
Next on to the... Do we want to transition to worlds? Because is there any nuts and bolts?
I think I'd like to know again what the status is with getting a fucking podcast out into the world. Just a thought.
From the audio department, which is me, Alejandro, he now has all the raw audio files at his disposal, so he can do his magic.
Mm-hmm.
And after, I guess, the next one, we are going to blow things up and try to figure out a different system to do this.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause this is kind of very, very guerrilla. And he... I envision at least that he'll put stuff up on SoundCloud and have higher quality MP3s than the ones I've been producing, and those will be shareable and good enough for public consumption.
For sure.
And we will have a we need to have a discussion about visual stuff in the background for YouTube and SoundCloud.
Yeah, that's no problem.
And other than that, putting it up on the Apple Podcast
iTunes.
iTunes, yeah. And there's also Overcast and a couple of others, but they all work on RSS feeds.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing. If anyone here has experience with podcasts and want to help me...
Come to us. Come to us and help us.
I'll foot the bill for any of the expenses, because we should collect expenses that we have for Spectra in case we ever do have a payout that we could actually like say, hey... Let's pay out all the debts,
mm-hmm.
that we've, you know, all those space curries and it would be, just keep an account if you think of anything. I'm hoping if we record one more episode 10, we should take a pause to think about the next story. And who wants to be the lead.
But I think that should be done on that. That should be recorded.
Episode in and of itself. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Would we invite somebody?
I think we should. Yeah, absolutely.
Wouldn't that be the moment to start?
Bring someone in.
Yeah.
I mean, Alejandro is slowly developing his character as well.
Mm-hmm.
Although it might be complicated
to bring him
to
in.
Have him. Yeah.
I mean, we should. We do need to work out a way of having people who can't physically be here be
mm-hmm.
here, and I don't think it's too.
That's part of the discussion about the after episode 10, that maybe it'd be nice that we could do this together,
mm.
but if we can't, then we can have a Skype system where the other person Skypes in and has a microphone over there recording in higher quality audio.
It's just a good case of a good microphone, right?
Yeah.
For
USB.
The speaky and...
Yeah.
Mm.
They're not
but then we need one a good speaker here to put them out.
Well, we'll be on headphones.
Oh, it's all getting recorded.
We'll ask Alejandro how to do this best.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Me and him have already
started.
Yeah, we'll find us.
Oh, yeah, that's not... okay, we crossed that bridge.
Yeah.
But in terms of a rough date of when...
Publishing.
I think we're ready for episode 1 whenever Alejandro's done with it.
It's the whenever done
yeah,
with it.
That's
holding back the...
No, I
how long do you envision the story chapter... to be in pages, like illustrated pages, or in images, or
it would, I think it could be, let's if to say it's a 28 page comic would be a good, like, just to keep it tight would be nice. If when making it, it suddenly seems that okay, this first chapter is actually, because it's the pilot episode, as it were, it's a,
it's,
you know, it's feature length, it's a double. We'll have to see when it goes, but I think to try and keep it to, like, as if it was a comic length. That's why I really like even plotting for digital or for screen. I like plotting in comic form because it creates, there's a natural, on the turn of a page, you've got a natural kind of break and a beat, and it kind of, it forces you to be quite strict.
That's good to know also for the storytelling itself, so that we don't
ramble on
and create gigantic, because
it could be in
let's say, quote unquote, several issues.
Yeah.
But it's better for us all to know.
Here's something I learned for the first time. So this is a standard format within comics, that the 28 pager.
That's the US format.
Yeah,
everything
US
from
one.
Saga, even the artsy ones, Alan Moore, everyone has a 28 page.
If they publish in single issues.
Yeah.
Like in these small comic books.
I understand.
There are some which are now called original graphic novels that don't publish small issues, but the whole book.
Book, for sure, okay. Yeah.
But it's the standard bi-weekly or monthly comic book.
So just so I know, Watchmen is this way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
The
V for Vendetta, like Saga. Okay.
Yeah.
Everything
they were all
that's issues.
Mm.
Intense. I never even thought about that, but that's true.
Not the like trade paperback.
Okay. Because.
But they're each like.
And then of course you'll have some
so
of them.
Each
will have
will, like one
rash.
Of the, that's one episode, like that's one issue. That was two when they originally came out. That's two. That's
okay.
Four, but that's like four or. Six.
Mm.
Yeah,
4 to 6 depends on the publisher.
Then you'll have splash pages,
okay,
which is like a big image.
They're all in this
format.
Yeah, they're all that.
These all the same length.
Which is pointing to a shelf of US comics from the '80s, from the '70s to the '90s, versus another shelf of trade paperbacks from more recent times. Just so you know.
No, because I was writing it more like as a screenplay.
Mm.
Yeah.
So now I have to think about the pacing.
Don't you worry about that. You write it how you want, and
yeah,
let the visual storyteller break it.
Break
into
down.
Pages.
Okay. Cool.
But the length helps.
Yeah, yeah,
for
yeah.
the storyteller to think of, well, how much can I tell?
Yeah. Don't write a script for a 500 page novel, please.
Never. It's a short story at best. Yeah.
Okay, so but back to your question, how can we somehow like narrow down the publishing date?
How long does it take you to make 20?
No, minutes? For the episode of a podcast.
For the podcast, like how did Alejandro give you a clue how long it will take?
Almost, it's streamlined at this point because he's done it for the previous ones.
Yeah.
It's point and click and we have his attention. So yeah, I think it's...
So we decide when we want to put it out.
Yeah.
So if we would say next week, Tuesday, the first episode is published to the net, it would be possible.
I've also heard, yes, and there's a good reason to do that as well, because a lot of people listen to podcasts when traveling for Thanksgiving. And so I've been hearing about this, that there's this effect that people discover something in Thanksgiving, and by Christmas they turned on most of their family members.
Sounds like a good deadline to
it. Yeah, and I think even if we have to figure out all the different channels, we should like use the easiest one, and I think that's SoundCloud
for sure,
to publish the first episode next week, and then over the course of the following 7 to X days we publish the episode on the next platform as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But we start with one and don't wait until we have all platforms ready and then launch the episode on
platforms
simultaneously,
yeah,
because then we'll never get done.
Okay.
I know.
Yes, exactly.
So yeah.
So what would that date be? If we wanted it for the Thanksgiving podcast sweet spot?
I would put it on...
Well, that would be this Thursday, right?
Yeah.
Thursday this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's
the 23rd.
Yes.
Of
November.
Or no, the Thanksgiving is usually on the last Thursday.
No, but it's not.
It's the fourth Thursday.
No, it's an extra long... It is the 23rd, I looked it up.
Okay. Okay, so maybe we
basically
we'll
pressed against the window outside. What is this? They're having turkey and treats.
Double, double.
Not for you.
And yeah, celebrating time. Their violent past.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I'm fine with it, because I think, yeah, the first episode, I'm very, you know, sound now a distant memory, but I think it might be ready.
I think it might be ready. Good. But there you go, you heard it here.
First, before anywhere else.
I don't think, I believe.
Yeah, I believe.
I believe it's ready.
I believe.
Let's do it.
This might not be edited out anyway. So.
And SoundCloud, do we want to create a specific Spectra?
Yeah.
Account that we all log into.
Yes.
We can all log into.
One Spectra.
To rule them all.
But no, I think here, like, the department's, you know, people responsibility type stuff, like, who needs access to it in a way, you know, like,
I don't probably need it, but we need a general Spectra thing,
general,
not
yeah.
one.
Okay,
no, it's not public.
Yeah, it shouldn't be like sort of yours
yeah, yeah.
thing. Yeah, yeah.
Stop hogging the sound.
Someone needs to set that up. It's probably
okay.
the person who is handling the files.
Yeah.
But then presumably the files will be uploaded to a shared space and anybody could do it if somebody's out of action.
For sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, I think nuts and bolts. This is about as Nazi and boltsy as it comes.
Hey, watch out with the Nazi.
Worlds. Transition. The... Dun, 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 dun. The world of Ghettostan, Hyper Dubai, the kind of favela belt. The one thing I wanted to point out that the discussion that we had about the pioneers that become the Ghettostanians as a religious group that migrated far into the universe and ended up there, and Hyper Dubai becomes the middleman between them and the rest of the universe. Ghettostan is the most populated part of the asteroid belt where the mining takes place, and that there are other asteroids that are more nomadic, and they're kind of more like the Bedouin. Like, the original people were all like
nomadic asteroids or nomadic people on asteroids?
Nomadic people on the asteroids.
Okay.
On nomadic asteroids.
Yeah. On, well, yeah.
That's what's inherently nomadic.
Like, let's just say it's like...
Hey, this is pure fantasy. We could have nomadic asteroids.
Yeah, they tame the asteroid riders and they tame them and, like, shuttle them
around.
Put
engines and
yeah,
move
yeah.
them.
Move
asteroid,
yeah, yeah.
The asteroid sailors, effectively. I like it a lot, actually.
But the idea
so
is that...
step up from the...
Development-wise...
Sungrazers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Develop... Like, no, the sungrazers are on the very fringes of society. They're, like, the space homeless.
Sure.
They're just like barely scraping by, but there's somewhere the nomadic kind of the fringes of civilization, as it were. I like this factor, and when we were thinking of the Viking, looked tribal to me in many ways. So that if we did want to make it into a character, that would be the world it would represent.
And are those people still around Ghettostan, or were they there once and they've moved on, or do they come back?
They swing by, they bring the asteroid by every however long the orbit cycle is. It could be like 5 years or something, and it's like, oh no, they're coming, and are they like raiders?
I don't think raiders as much as like
ship.
Trading,
okay.
per se.
More Bedouins.
More Bedouin kind of like, hey, but also, you know, they live a hardy life. That it wouldn't be unthinkable for them to have like violent tendencies, or how this connects with the Viking civilization is yet to be kind of.
Does it need to?
No, I was just thinking.
What purpose do these people serve in this story? Is it just more kind of texture?
I think partially texture, and sorry, but like I was trying to save the to make a character.
She's just a part of. She's the Viking femmes. She's just another one. I think she's from the original world. These guys you're describing, I see much more like wrapped up, like Lawrence of Arabia, but spacey with goggles, basically goggles.
I think they add
and breathing apparatus.
They add a kind of authenticity to Ghettostan. You know what I'm saying? Like as a
well, they can be either foreshadowed by random characters talking about them coming up soon
yeah.
in their next cycle. They could be referenced as history. It's yeah. okay to like put them in there so that the reader, listener knows that
actually,
these people can come up at any point.
So yeah. since
I like also that idea of there being like a history to the whole play.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah,
it
should.
Definitely should be. How I mean, Hyperdubai profiting off of Gerdostan, right? That,
sure,
that's
yeah.
the thing. How does that happen on a daily basis? Like, how does I mean they get the resources from Gerdostan
mm-hmm.
and then trade them off to the rest of the universe? That's
mm-hmm.
what I
yeah roughly
right?
yeah, yeah.
yeah. So how does that happen physically?
So we have the industrial belt,
mm-hmm.
Which is entirely
around the planet.
Yes.
Around Hyperdubai.
Hyperdubai, a moon or a planet?
Yeah,
it's a moon, but it, like if it was a planet, that's.
I think if it were being a moon, because then it should be smaller,
mm-hmm.
more manageable, and the planet necessarily
course,
doesn't have to even be habitable.
Yeah,
so.
Or the planet was mined to shit, and that's what this asteroid. Felt this if that kind of works.
Yeah, no, that.
Or
think
kind of cluster, you know, of like rocks. This idea of it not being a. Of actually all these like really kind of fractured and actually it's not all the favelas and the asteroids
mm-hmm.
there's you know there's a clump and then there's some spinning around but it's all completely kind of fractured and like
okay
funky yeah yeah we discussed this I can't remember which episode but the idea is the industrial belt is
mm-hmm.
entirely factories like no humans
yeah
no one
yeah.
would even think to go there
mm-hmm.
and it's just input output
it's all automated
yeah it's like sort of like the human factor or the humanoid factor is so minimized at that
okay.
point and it's like
and security right
yeah it's like it's clear that the Hyperdubai isn't doing anything
yeah,
okay.
yeah. but I mean how when if the factories are automated how where just for me to get it right where's Gerdostan in this setup like is it next to the mines is it beneath or around
it's floating
it's floating so they're
near the automation
yeah.
line
so, I,
mm-hmm.
like the we also had a discussion about this about what would be easier to represent visually but it's like sort of the moon of Hyperdubai the industrial belt and then the asteroids are all rotating in
okay.
the same
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
circle
okay,
we're around a planet around the sun obviously or a planet and then a sun. We didn't even think about like what the planet is really.
Yeah,
well,
right.
I like the idea that the original planet isn't there anymore, and just the moon where Hyperdubai is intact, and the planet like imploded some.
Oh, was just mined to like just
yeah.
mined.
Yeah,
or
mined
out
until there was
like,
nothing left, like bits and pieces.
Pieces
I like that
maybe.
Idea.
Maybe. Yeah.
And I kind of saw it that each. This kind of cluster of sort of, you know, Gerdostan is actually like just these different, various different kind of lumps of rock that are kind of bound together by a common
mm-hmm.
culture, and then each rock has its own little mining operation
mm-hmm.
going on in it.
But there's one main, let's say, asteroid, which is Gerdostan.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Although everybody in the
neighboring, it could be a little bit floating, you know, like
everybody
a floating
in the neighboring
market.
Asteroids could also be referred to. Gerdostan
is a derogatory term for the most densely populated part of the asteroid.
Exactly.
All right, that's cool.
Because
asteroid
I just wanted to get this
yeah.
Right, because how do people on Gerdostan really live? Like, do they have an atmosphere?
Oh,
yes.
For sure, color. Yeah, there's like living on top of each other, high urban density.
Not that kind of atmosphere.
I mean,
like
everything for breathing.
Oh.
Because if we talk about asteroids, asteroids usually don't have an atmosphere.
I would imagine
it
just to be like a bunch of tin cans put together.
Yeah, and if you leave the tin can, you have to put on some helmet of
breathing
device.
It's breathing
apparatus. Yeah, yeah, but you have to have that.
But and in the more densely populated parts, they've got the atmosphere, you know, the generators.
The generators, yeah.
But the further
okay,
out you get, the harder it gets.
Yeah, okay. Good.
So the poorer you are, the farther out you live, then the less
until you end up like a sunriser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Because
solar
just when thinking the story, like when Ash and Morgan arrive there, how would they do that? Like, would they fly into a hangar and park, or would they like fly down and just leave the ship in an open desert-like space, then put on their breathing mask and walk into the favela thing, so that's just why I'm trying to get
another possibility is that when you're in the alleys of the thing that there are these AC air conditioner machine type things that are putting out the air, mm-hmm. and that everyone's in their space suit, they have a thing that just like opens up and gives you oxygen or mm-hmm. you know, some mm-hmm. sort of mm-hmm. makeshift like space. But I wouldn't even know how to think about it scientifically, like pressure. Not for this story, at least.
I wouldn't recommend that we go into hard
sci-fi. More like an aesthetic and visual.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
yeah, I think these are questions to be answered.
These people who live there, do they have like heavy suits?
No
matter how they work, or do they have like, because it's maybe very hot, they need to have light attire and just a breathing mask, and inside of the bigger compounds they have these atmospheric generators,
mm-hmm.
because if they then go to the space curry bar, how would that look? Would it look like the bar on Tatooine in Star Wars, which is more like they're lightly dressed because it's a desert planet, or is it more like they have to be
I think
eerie.
Because there's people coming through from all different planets, then it's all relative anyway. So some people, it's for them it's going to be hot, and for other people it's going to be really cold, and it's sort of, you get this kind of mix of different, species that handle it differently.
It's really this pool of different beings and cultures.
But a tin can habitat, right?
Yeah,
where there's
sure.
a lot of stuff just jury-rigged together,
rust,
umbilicals connecting.
DIY.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mediterranean,
mm-hmm.
urban. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cool. Then we have the automated belt, which, as you said, is
super
mostly
speed.
Sparsely.
Yeah. Johnny Ive, you know.
Johnny Ive?
Like the designer for Apple. You know,
okay.
Like everything is simple, sleek.
Understand.
You know, like
clean.
Artificial. Yeah,
clean.
Clean artificial.
And then does Hyper Dubai have an atmosphere?
For sure. It's.
Okay. So that is a place where you can be outside.
Ah, yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, because
or is that also a super
dressed very flamboyantly? And
it's
not practical,
Tokyo-esque.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's what the suit is.
Yeah.
But does that moon have air?
Sidebar.
Dubai, or is
Dubai.
It also just
completely
built up?
They've got the best, but they've got the best air. Atmosphere generator,
yeah.
So it's like a beautiful, like, you know.
So we can imagine like
the
beautiful plazas.
Oh, maybe that's a tool. He's going to take out he's going to destroy the atmosphere. He's going to take
out that's
the
bombing attack.
And,
exactly.
And because it's oxygen, a highly oxygenated atmosphere, he's going to blow it. I also like the idea we can see all of these different environments, because he's got to walk, he's got to make it to the industrial belt to launch himself off. So
okay.
we actually see him kind of go through all these different environments.
Nice.
So he's like just walking on the industrial kind of the bit. And he, you know, maybe there's some like, just robots come and stop him, and he gets through.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got some bad ninja moves.
That would be my next question. Like, how long does it take for someone to get from Gallows Town to Hyper Dubai? Like, is that a short distance, or is it a longish distance? Because when
short, if you've got the money, and possibly long if you.
But
if
is it easy to get? And because with your spaceship, like Ashpew's spaceship, can we just
5 minutes?
5 minutes, okay. Because just thinking again of the story after
this, doing four.
after the hangover and the big fight between Ash and Adul, he storms off, and they have to somehow stop him. So how does that work in time? That's what I'm asking. So
I would think it would be longer.
What's
even if it's not hard sci-fi, you still have to like get into the ship. You still have to move slowly away from the asteroid so you don't burn everybody in the asteroid.
There's two storytelling possibilities here. The China Mieville, what's his name? The there's the story about like a city divided.
Mm-hmm.
The city and the city.
The city and the city, yeah. It's not that close, but I want it to be in the direction of like it's surprisingly close.
Sure.
So like West Bank.
But 5 minutes makes it, one, narratively really difficult to stop anybody from doing
anything.
For sure,
yeah.
Yeah. 25 minutes.
20, yeah.
Do it in 20.
It's a commute.
Okay,
it's a commute.
That's good, Ash. Yeah. That's good. If you can do it in 20.
It's a commute.
With the, is there anything more about the world that you want to define?
No, I think it's like.
That's the clearest picture of it we've got yet, I think.
No, Hyper Dubai is being kind of like Tokyo-esque, but somewhere Tokyo Mall.
I've seen palm trees, though. I'm seeing that. I'm seeing the kind of Dubai-like water and putting green, but it's all
fake,
manufactured.
Fake green.
Yeah.
Manicured and sort of like
synthetic trees.
Cloned and grown, like really like leaves, but like completely.
Yeah, maybe even just like digital illusions.
Yeah,
like projections. Think a bit about Blade Runner.
Yeah, to do certain projections. I can see these on the day city when it's all gleaming and water and you know fountains and green. And then the sort of the night city and the kind of these big like beams of light coming out and it's all it's tasteful but in a like soulless way.
Yeah.
Like the mall exactly. Really shiny mall.
And the other big thing is hierarchies. Like the entire concept of this story is emphasizing hierarchies. That even within Hyper Dubai, the part that's more advertising and gross is where the poorer inhabitants of Hyper Dubai, but you always have these pockets of like first class, the business lounge.
When you talk about poorer, what are you talking about? I never imagined that there was...
Yeah, poor, but let's say middle class, yeah.
Okay. Like, so people who have access to leisure, but not as much as some other people might have access
to. First class.
So, I mean, and does this help us to have a hierarchy within a hierarchy? Is it not kind of more simple and more powerful if it's just everybody there is rich and everybody there is poor? That is the, like... I mean, like, to have it kind of within the within, sure, but I don't think anyone should be... The kind of... The gold platinum lounge should be... Can be there, but it really is... It's like everyone's rich and then there's the really, really, really rich.
There might be in crowds and cliques...
But maybe we'll save that for Yacht World, but
sure.
Yacht World.
I also agree that I don't think we need a middle class in Hyper Dubai.
Yeah.
It just makes it, it starts to make it, of course, more real,
but
also more confusing
storytelling wise.
To storytell
in
28 pages.
I play.
A question about how people perceive other people in Hyper Dubai, because I think that when Ash and Morgan enter Hyper Dubai and they are like on the open streets, they would be easily recognized, right?
The idea is that Ash fits in everywhere.
Yeah, but I mean,
well,
Morgan doesn't.
they
are wearing wolf stuff.
Maybe you have to put this on and then there's a bit of a like...
Do they have to dress in a disguise or do they try to sneak?
You can have a clip that's so like a Hyper Dubai socialite looks at your outfit and like, that's so 2067 or something.
I can imagine that they would just see you as a wealthy tourist.
Okay, because...
Eccentric or whatnot, but I think if you have the way to pay for the...
Yeah.
For the pleasure.
Once you... So the people who live there say, think if you're here, you have to have... you have to be all right. You must be affluent.
Well, the nice way to play it would be like, rather than that's so last season. It's more like, oh darling, oh I love that like shabby chic. Oh, it's so like that's so hot right now. And then suddenly everybody's got these kind of like feathers and things walking around because then they thought it was a like that's kind of Ashkill's shtick. He like does it with confidence, and everybody's
then,
like, okay, maybe that is the way it should
be. Okay, just. To make that clear that once they're in the city or in that sealed off space, they don't have constantly worry about like guards.
Found out.
Okay,
is that thing?
They
like,
definitely wouldn't be fooled by Abu's attire.
No,
I mean, he probably doesn't have a way to get another one.
Or maybe this can be a thing like. He borrows something from Ash.
On the spaceship, there's a pretty substantial wardrobe.
Yeah,
so
because
he has
to sneak in the bomb somehow, so maybe he, before storming off, he just takes stuff from you.
Yeah, I think there's a large array of, like, I don't think that it would be a problem to acclimatize people to any world.
You could have machines that make, that just...
make you look great,
The Fashiontron 5000.
For example.
So, what would in turn make it interesting to think about the story that develops as initially Morgan and Ash come to stop Adul, but only by coming to the place he has finally the gadget or the possibility to go into the city, because before that he couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice.
I like it.
And we also have the paperwork idea that, yeah, like Ash's character can get you through borders.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not just the papers. Yeah, this is like,
it's just the whole thing, yeah.
Maybe Ghetto Stan's problem is that whenever they try to get in, it's like, you know, someone who's trying to go to Berghain at like midnight wearing like a dress shirt and you're like, no, that's not how you do it. You know, it's like the insider-outsider knowledge thing.
For our non-Berliner friends, don't try to wear a suit to get into it. Don't work that way.
Just don't try to get into Berghain
at
all.
That's a great
another option. Okay, so world, bloop, I think we've already kind of into character.
Yeah, sure. I see the world very clearly. No. No, I just need to visualize it.
Okay, yeah. It's time-wise, we have 5 minutes to do this, but we can two-parter.
Maybe split it up into two episodes.
Yeah,
because if we get into characters and the plot,
it's going to be
at least 30 minutes more.
But we don't have time for that today, I'm afraid.
Okay, no worries. Good thing we did the nuts and bolts first, because that's probably the most important.
Yeah, all of this did help a lot to think of the plot.
Put pieces
more
together.
I mean, is it worth doing a quick round on character, or is that just crazy?
I think
we're wasting time by not doing it. Okay, fine. No, we save it.
We'll save.
But I've got some things I want to say real bad.
Okay, then go for it.
Well, then this is the miscellaneous moment.
Okay, I was thinking about her intelligence after sharing that video of... I'll share the link below the thing, you can watch it. And so if her intelligence appears at first to be this kind of like slightly eccentric, broken, sort of hunched old man, as it were, but a robot... a machine that has this kind of quirky, kind of glitchy nature, a little bit like Yoda, as Yoda appears. But I think there's a kind of tradition in this Japanese storytelling to have this slightly eccentric, weird character who then is revealed to be very knowledgeable. And so you've got this kind of slightly busted, weird, eccentric robot who's claiming to know all the knowledge of the universe and be able to predict these events. And everyone's like, no, it's just get out of here, move along now, like, not you again, get on. But, you know, but Aspure, they kind of have a connection, and then these kind of predictions, as they were, they sort of, like, the stuff that this robot is saying is then proved seemingly to be fact, and only a few stages later on in the chapters do we actually get to the mainframe, the world where the HI has come from, and we see, okay, no, this was all true. There really is a kind of galactic mainframe that has all the knowledge of the universe. We just thought it was this kind of kooky, like, weird, busted robot.
Ash's ability to recognize, or because of his previous experience with higher intelligence, gives him actually an advantage over the denizens of Hyper Dubai. Even maybe the heads of state of Hyper Dubai are not aware of higher intelligence. So this is, in a way, really good, I think, storytelling... To show that not just Ash Pure is this kind of go between social hierarchies, but also information hierarchies. That
he knows a lot about different worlds, factions.
And there's a lot of weirdos throughout the galaxy.
I like playing the idea of playing with higher intelligence at the beginning in very kind of mysterious ways. For example, I don't envision higher intelligence to represent all of the mainframe. It's not like a collective consciousness. I think there's many different personalized or individuals within that mainframe world, but they could almost be interchangeable because they do all share their experiences and their knowledge.
But I wonder if, and maybe we don't, this is going too far, but if this one has been struck by lightning and is, you know, a little bit glitchy and has kind of developed a bit more eye to its robot.
Yes.
And it's kind of not going a bit off program in sharing this information or not, you know, it doesn't.
Because again, the probability thing that the higher intelligence collective, as it were, thinks that Ash's mission is like doomed because the odds are so low, but this robot's like, you know what, maybe let's give it a chance.
Yeah, I think of that there being more like different factions, the whole also it's kind of more like circumstantial that he's in a crappy robotic shell,
right?
Because
right.
as we had said, they could use any kind of robotic body.
Yeah.
So it's fine. I think it's a good narrative device because it's a trope in a certain way, but not necessarily because we're not going to stick to it
throughout
all the other
The physical form of higher intelligence is irrelevant because it can move to different robots, or to different objects.
But why would it choose to be represent itself then as a strange old man?
I just like the idea maybe that there is something about this particular unit, this higher intelligence unit, that has been cut off from the kind of mainframe. It is maybe like trapped in this body. There's something to make it flawed a little bit until it then returns to the mainframe and gets uploaded to a new body. And then, oh no, it's kind of lost all its charm. It's lost its kind of quirky human characteristics. It's now got its new shiny.
Well, we could look at that in the next story.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a whole thing of, well, within these different factions, this particular approach, which is giving Ash a chance, wasn't well liked, which then leads to this instance of the hyperintelligence to take whatever it can, which is a crappier robot that might have been in a fight or whatnot, which leads to all the quirks and so on and so forth.
Well, the reveal that this old man was really a hyperintelligent being could be in the epilogue of the first story, chapter, book.
We will discuss that further next time.
Just real quick, my character thingy I thought about, like, when we first when Morgan first comes to see Ash, they are really, really basic. Like, they don't have any, they don't, because I mean, the resources on their home planet is there, but they have like this very feral kind of thing. But then I had the idea to, because everything is very like spacey, and I don't know if a person with just a wooden staff would be like very suitable for that.
I still think that would be cool.
Yeah, diversity is interesting.
Yeah, but I thought maybe Morgan could get an upgrade by Ash on his ship, like they get a like some attachment to the staff, which also opens up some digital ideas. Just roughly, I'm not sure.
It's the crystal that is that they're mining.
Yeah.
And he puts it on and the thing, and that becomes her like talisman and her
something like that.
Their kind of beacon, their symbol of spiritual of deeper
thing. Yeah.
But it's kind of spiritual tech/technology.
And thus also making Morgan a bit more useful when they encounter some fights or some problems.
Because
otherwise Morgan would just throw some powder or stuff and whatnot. I don't know. They would be pretty useless in that kind of.
But the amateur aspect of Morgan is also the charm.
Yes, of course. And that's the arc we want to. That's going to be one of
Morgan
the
will grow a lot through all those episodes.
Cool. Okay, Lloyd. Thank you very much. And till
next time.
Till next time.
Till next time.
Bye bye.